This is Dom Bettinelli, the CEO of SQPN, with a brief but very important message. For more than a decade, SQPN has produced the Catholic faith and pop culture podcasts that you love. We're a nonprofit organization, so it's only your generosity that lets us carry out our mission. We haven't run a fundraiser in 2 years, and that's why we need to ask for your help right now. Please make a pledge of whatever amount you can afford to help us continue providing your favorite podcasts, as well as exciting new ones we have planned. To make your pledge and find out about the free thank you gifts we'd like to send you, visit sqpn.com/give. That's sqpn.com/give. Thank you for your generosity. May we hear from you today?
You're listening to Let's Talk, episode 29, brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network. Y'all, Father Corey Ustica is back. I'm back after a couple weeks away. Thank you very much to Dom Bettinelli for taking over for me when I wasn't able to host the podcast for a couple of weeks. I know he did an awesome job and greatly appreciate his willingness to step in his busy schedule of hosting a lot of other podcasts. But I am back and we've got a couple of good topics today and we've got a couple of good panelists, a couple of our regulars are back. First of all, Joanne Mercier is here. How's it going, Joanne?
Happy New Year, everybody. Of course, the liturgy just has to say that after the first Sunday of Advent.
Exactly. Yeah, we're in the new liturgical year, and Steve Nelson's back as well. How's it going, Steve?
I'm doing well. I'm trying to stay warm. It turned really cold the last couple of days.
Well, how do you want to define cold?
Yeah, really.
Cold for Oklahoma. It's hovering right at freezing.
Oh, that sounds balmy to me. I'm looking at my little outside temperature gauge right now, and it's got single digit.
Okay, you beat me. I'm at 30.
Yeah, we've got white stuff on the ground and it's pretty brisk out there right now, but that's what you expect for December in Montana. Mm-hmm. It's what I signed up for better or worse. So other than cold, how are things going down there, Steve?
Going well. You know, our town of Stillwater here had their holiday parade last night, which was very it's a very small town, you know. Mm-hmm. They wrapped one of the fire engines in wrapping paper and that kind of thing.
Oh, fun.
It was fun. I mean, it was fun. It was a 25-minute parade, but it was great.
Nice. Yeah, a lot of these small towns can do parades like that pretty well, can't they?
Yeah, and people turned out for it.
You know, they have a lot of fun. I remember as a kid, of course, growing up in small towns. I always loved it when the floats would come by and they'd throw the candy. Go running out into the street and grab the candy. And
we were standing at the end of the parade route, so we got all the leftovers.
Oh, even better.
I know.
And how about you, Joanne? How are things going for you?
Oh, in the thick of Advent. Just trying to get all the programs done for the mission we're having next week and, you know, getting all the Christmas stuff ready to go when it needs to go. That's the life in a parish at this point in time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Know that feeling. Well, I'm kind of there too, you know, penance services and Advent wreath and all that kind of good stuff. So, but it's worth it. It's so much, it's a beautiful season. I love the season of Advent. It really is one of my favorite.
It's nice to celebrate Advent before Christmas. Exactly.
We talked about that before, didn't we? Oh,
it was good. Good show.
Yes. Yeah, so very good. And, you know, around here, like Joanne, I'm in the middle of Advent prep and meetings and this and that and the other thing and going here and going there. I'm going to need my post-Christmas break just to, you know, like sleep for a day.
That sounds good to me.
I'm actually kind of glad I'm going to drive and visit my folks probably the week after, so the week of New Year's. And I'll leave here on after Sunday Mass, after Christmas, and then drive to Missoula, which is the halfway point between here and my parents' house. And I probably won't be too in a hurry that morning to get up and go the next morning. You know, I'll probably kind of take it easy in the hotel room and relax and just take my time because I'm going to need it.
The only thing about after Christmas hangover, as I call it, is a little less daunting than the after Easter hangover. The after Holy Week.
Yeah.
This is the preparatory one.
Of course. This year is a little one of the harder ones, too, though. Not as bad as last year by any stretch of the imagination, but because you've got Saturday night, Sunday masses, and then Christmas Eve, Christmas Day masses right in a row.
Yeah, and it's happening twice this month because you have the holy day, you had the holy day for Immaculate Conception on a Saturday.
Yep.
Okay, so that bumps into, we even had to tell people, gee, folks, if you go once on Saturday, it does not count for two.
Yep, exactly. I had to do that. No double dipping.
So you have that one first, and now then you have the other one on the other side, which is the 4-day.
You know, kind of, that's part of the reason, kind of pull back the veil here. That's part of the reason why we're actually recording this on Friday afternoon instead of Saturday morning, like we usually do, because I have Mass this evening at 5:30 and then tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock for Immaculate Conception, followed by my usual 4 o'clock Mass and weekend schedule. So it's, it's busy weekend.
Yeah. Our parish did the same thing, but they also do First Friday Masses. So they added, they tacked another one on the end of it. So Friday and then the Vigil Mass and then the Saturday Mass and then the Sunday Masses and then the.
I took the opportunity to sleep in today. I didn't get out of bed till 8 o'clock, which is usually about half an hour before my daily Mass. So I took well advantage of it. So kind of go into what our topic of conversation. One of the big things that happened this past week was the funeral of former President George H.W. Bush, or Bush Senior. You're 41, whatever you might call him. You know, and it, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to watch it, but both Joanne and Steve watched it. You both sound like you're pretty impressed by what you saw.
Yeah, I watched most of it from the time that he was lying in state at the U.S. Capitol, through the final burial procession that they had yesterday. I watched a lot of it, and I'm a sucker for that kind of patriotic ritual, you know, as well as all of the religious stuff that went on. And I'm just always so impressed by how we pull those things off. You know, the honor guards and the bands and the 21 gun salutes and the flyovers and everything. I didn't see a misstep at all in anything they did. I thought it was just absolutely wonderful the way they did it all.
Well, I'm sure there was lots of, at least, you know, talk about the military side of it, at least I'm sure there was lots of drilling going on, lots of practice before they got to that point. And of course it would be the all branch honor guards too. So, I mean, it wouldn't be like the local base sending an honor guard, like you might see with a veteran's funeral in a small town like here, but it was like, you know, the Air Force honor guard, the all Air Force honor guard, the all Marines honor guard, you know, they want to make sure the best and brightest are, representing each branch. So, yeah.
I was particularly impressed with the Marine Corps, orchestra that they had during the, service at the National Cathedral.
Sure.
First of all, I think the Marine Corps musicians are the best of all the branches. I've just been so impressed with what they do. And they did, at the end, they did a version of the Battle Hymn of the Republic that I can't imagine there was a dry eye in the house.
Well, sure. Once I'm looking at the list of the full service, and it's pretty incredible what all they did.
Mm-hmm. And
Oh,
no, go ahead.
What do you think, Joanne?
Well, I was pretty impressed with the music itself, because and I hope this doesn't offend anybody, but I thought it was more Catholic and more Catholic than most Catholic funerals I've played or been to. So I was extremely impressed with the selections, and it's not, and again, it's not because I'm old either. It's because right. they took the time to find music that fit the occasion. Now, this was a state funeral, Episcopalian in nature. And yes, you're going to get things that you wouldn't normally hear at a Catholic mass, but or even at an Episcopal service. Mm-hmm. But it was all done with a lot of reverence and a lot of thought. There was a good mixture of hymnody, the King of Love, My Shepherd Is, Oh God, Our Help in Ages Past, Praise My Soul, the King of Heaven. And these are all mm-hmm. hymns that you'll hear in Catholic Church on a Sunday morning at different times right. during the year. But then they had like Michael W. Smith did a beautiful mm-hmm. song, which I have to find and put on my playlist. Because I thought
Friends.
Wonderful. Friends, yeah. I thought that's wonderful.
Yeah, that's one of his, that's probably his most well-known song, you know, that he really kind of got his career going years and years ago. I remember hearing that back when I was in high school, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. So.
Oh, and see, I know him mostly for his Christmas
album. Yeah.
So right. I had never heard that one before, and I was really, really impressed with it.
Nice.
But I liked the mixture, but again, it was thought out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was reverent to the occasion as well as meant something, I think, to the family. The different right. pieces.
I heard on one of the news channels that as soon as a person becomes president, they start planning the state funeral.
Oh, sure.
Don't priests do that too?
We're supposed to. We're supposed to have our plans submitted to the diocese. Yeah, that it's on the list after 10 and a half years.
Well, that's all right. I mean, I've planned mine out because I don't trust my family to know what I would want as far as music. You know, I mean, because I've worked as a lay minister and I've worked, you know, so I know what I want. And they would just take the book and they would just start checking things off. And it's like, no, that's not what I want.
Yeah.
Oh, I've done it too. And I keep changing it. Because there are things that, and I think I have ever being what I do for a living, which is liturgy, music, and mm-hmm. the like. It depends on time of year. I mean, if it's Lent, I've got, okay, use this. If it's Easter, use this. If it's Christmas, mm-hmm. use the Christmas carol. Because all of these speak to, you know, the life everlasting and, right. you know, the resurrection experience.
Well, it's, you know, I can, you know, as a priest, of course, who does prepare families for funerals, I think it's a great thing that people can do for their family is to have that conversation. And I know it's a very difficult conversation. We don't want to talk about death, but we need to, and have that prepared. I've had funerals like that where they were prepared. They had everything lined up. All we had to do was pull the books out and get going. You know, it wasn't a big deal. I had one this was with my first year, my first assignment, I had a funeral. And this lady was a lady who was very active in the church when she was in good health. She ended up, I think she was like 95 when she passed. But when she was in good health, she was very active in the parish and knew a lot of people in the parish. So she had everything down to which ministers were going to do what roles, who was going to be the lectors, who was going to be the extraordinary ministers, who were going to be the musicians. The only problem was she did it 25 years before and only one of them was still alive.
Oh, no.
So we had to find new ones anyways, but everything else was planned out. All the music was planned out. I think there was one song we had to change because it was a song that was popular back in the church, back in the early 80s, that had fallen out of favor by this time. And so, you know, it's just, no one knew it.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
It was, you know, because there were songs that, you know, in the 70s and 80s were very popular for doing as part of masses and funerals or whatever. But they weren't classic hymns or anything like that. They were just kind of some of the more contemporary hymns of the time. Well, they never kept up with that one. And that one kind of fell out of the OCP book. It fell out of, you know, it just kind of disappeared. So no one knew it. So we had to change that one. But beyond that, I mean, it was pretty well, okay, she wants this reading, got it. She wants these music, got it. She wants these people. Well, not so much, but it was still a lot easier than talking to a family who, you know, their loved one just died suddenly. They're in grief. They're dealing with the funeral home and everything that goes with that. And then they have to come over to the church, or I have to meet them over at the funeral home, and they have to try to pick out readings and music and people. And it gets very difficult.
It does. So it does. I do that as part of what I do. In fact, I'm the backup for that, I should say, because right. my counterpart, pastoral associate, that's what she does. She's very pastoral when she has to sit down with families and plan funeral. When she's on vacation, I do. And they come in various stages of grief, of denial, of angst, and it takes a very special type of finessing to explain to them, this is what we need from you. We know this is a difficult time. Please, we make it easy for you to get it back to us. And I think most families appreciate the time that we take with them. Because the funeral homes that we work with have been very, very cooperative with that. Because we had to tell people certain things, like, no, you can't have three people give a eulogy, like the Bush funeral. Because that's not what we do. It's not how it works. Right. And a lot of people, most people understand.
Yeah. And that is always a difficult part of it, is trying to tell people, no, you, I know you've seen that. I know you've gone to this service or that service, and we can't do that as Catholic, and certain places have, certain places have rules. There are no eulogies, because I've seen them to be abused, and some families don't understand that. Oh, but this person is like, no, you don't understand. We just, as a rule, don't allow them, because there's been too many problems in the past.
That's what the wake is for.
Yeah, exactly.
You try telling them that, though, Steve, and they look at you like, no, the wake is for all of us to stand around and talk to each other. No, but there's a wake service, and you can incorporate that standing around and talking by having people get up and share their favorite, sometimes a little infamous stories. Go make it in church.
Well, and that's pretty popular around here, is they basically will have, disclosure, and I'm sure somebody will a liturgist will yell at me for this, but we really don't do the vigil service that's in the book. It has never caught on as a habit.
Wow, I'm not hearing this.
Yeah, exactly. Because everybody wants the rosary. Everybody wants the traditional rosary.
Yeah.
And that's what we do. But then after the rosary, they will have almost a formalized wake. It's the strangest thing, where everybody will kind of sit there, and then someone will get up and say a few words, and then other people will be invited to stand up and say a few words. And it's not like a wake where I picture, where people kind of milling around having, coffee and cookies or beer and pretzel if they happen to be at the bar or wherever. And, Just visiting and telling stories and having a good time. It really is a more formalized surface. It's really kind of a different.
Oh, wow.
Different setup.
Yeah. Up here in New England, they do a lot of, most of them do the wake service. But if you're ethnic, Portuguese, Polish, they'll still ask for the rosary, because that's what they've known. Most of them, the wake service seems to be, and I know that there are folks who don't do the wake service exactly the way it's spelled out, and that's fine as long as you get the, for me, as long as you get the gist of it. And I think it really is a good time to ask people, would you like to say something? This is a good time to do that.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of the difficulties you see. And obviously, if you're going to be planning a funeral, it's best to talk to your pastor / pastoral associate / whoever it is that helps plan funerals. I know if a parishioner came to me and said, hey, Father, I know, I'm still in good health, and I know it's probably going to be 30 years, but I'd like some help to plan my funeral. I'd be more than happy to meet with them for, half an hour, sit down and say, okay, here's what's involved in planning a funeral.
But a lot of people think doing it ahead of time is morbid.
It is, and it should be. No, it's a part of life.
It is, exactly. I know people who won't go out and get their plot headstone ahead of time. Mm-hmm. I can't talk my husband into it, but I think it's a, I think it's a good thing to do ahead of time. But other people don't, and you need to respect that too. Because some people aren't ready for it, and then might make choices that, later on somebody will say, boy, why did they choose that? They would probably have no idea. But looking at the Bush, these funerals that are on TV, the ones that get the attention of folks, and then they say, well, we want it like that. They don't understand that is either secular or different tradition.
Right. And, you know, I mean, obviously the list that I'm looking at is just, you know, from one of the news channels, and it's the program, basically. But it looks very similar to what we would do as a non-mass funeral, mm-hmm. you know, a funeral service without the mass, you know.
Yeah, that was my take, too. It was very similar. I mean, it was familiar to me, even though it was Episcopalian, just because it was like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, because you got the entrance and everything, you know, and of course, you know, it's a big thing. So they've got the full prelude and honors and, you know, the introit. And by the way, they call it introit. You know, that's a term you don't hear a lot. And it's kind of starting to come back because we actually use it as part of the new translation. But, you know, just it's much more elaborate than your typical parish funeral would be, but the basic setup is still kind of the same.
Are you looking at the one at the National Cathedral or the one in Houston?
National Cathedral, first one.
The one in Houston felt more like a parish funeral service. It was less formal, more relaxed in some ways.
Sure. Now, and I think the Bush family has always been Episcopalian. I might be wrong on that.
I believe that's true. Because they said that they had been a member of that parish in Houston for 50 years. Right. I think they had, from a young age, I think they were Episcopalian.
Okay.
I think it might be G.W. Bush, the 43, that might be... not
like Methodist.
Because they also belong up in Kittybunkport to First Congregational.
Okay, more congregational. Okay,
yeah, they said up here that they were attended both the Episcopal and Congregational churches in Kittybunkport. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I believe he also might be an evangelical.
Sure, that could be. That very well could be.
But I think the family is steeped in Episcopalian traditions.
Interesting. Yeah. I thought I'd heard that once. And of course, I know for a lot of these kind of things, the National Cathedral, the Washington National Cathedral, which is the Episcopal Cathedral of Washington, is used for a lot of these events, whether or not they're Episcopalian. You know, they're very, very open to that for, you know, something like a president or something like that. They'll a political figure of some sort. One thing that was interesting you kind of mentioned, Steve, was the military side of it, and not just, of course, the music, but also some of the rituals, the military rituals that you might see at a military funeral of a veteran or a retiree. When I was in the Air Force, I did 4 years active duty Air Force right out of high school. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, so I went in the Air Force. I was on the base honor guard for Scott Air Force Base, Illinois. And that was an interesting experience to get to go and do some of these funerals, obviously not to the level of a president of the United States, but for these veterans and these retirees who had, you know, had served and, you know, they died, whether due to, you know, old age or whatever. It was an honor. It was really actually was an honor for me to be able to do that.
I've never known anybody other than you that have done that, but I'm mm-hmm. always fascinated. You know, I have a music background and a marching band background and things. So I'm always watching the precision and nobody does it better than the military, you know?
Oh yeah. It became part of my job when I was in the military, but for the ones that you would have seen, like I said, for the major events like this, these are the honor guards of the different branches. So their job is to be the honor guard. You know, they're the ones that do the details at the different veteran cemeteries and things like that around DC and Arlington being the biggest one. Stuff like that, you know, that's their job. So they drill that, but you know, they were being watched very closely, I'm sure, by their superiors as they were doing this.
There was I think it was the same unit out of Washington that the company, the body the whole way, because there was this Navy, I think, commander, four stripes on the sleeve, a woman, and she was there for all of them. And she would help. She was always with the clergy, helping them, you know, make sure they navigated where they needed to be. But I think she was also overall in charge of the honor guard.
Right.
And I really felt for them because they had a lot of steps to go up and down with the casket. and they do it one step at a time, you know, and it's like, that's 25 steps. They got to take one step at a time carrying a casket. I was like, they're going to be exhausted.
Yeah.
Did I hear correctly that at the Capitol was 365 steps from where he was to go up the stairs and then to where he's being laid? I heard that number thrown out.
And I don't know. It could be.
I wanted to make some kind of, you know, comment like, wow, it's a year in steps. How do you know 365?
Oh, I'm sure somebody's counted them.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man, yeah, that's having done this again, not on this level, but I can imagine what that's like where, you know, it's the weather is usually not the greatest and you've got to maintain your military precision, but it's difficult sometimes. Some of those funerals, that I've had to do are you know, again, on a much lower level were difficult. I can't imagine when the eyes of the world are really watching you being in that position.
Yeah, when they were waiting for the train to arrive in College Station yesterday, the honor guard had to stand in this light rain. And they were not at attention, but I guess at parade rest.
Yep.
And
probably.
And they didn't move a muscle for at least 30 minutes. Yep. I mean, all they did was blink their eyes, and even with the rain falling on them, you know, you think you might feel a little uncomfortable, but they didn't show it one bit.
Yeah, that's I've had details like that when I was in the Air Force, where we got into the van one time and the snow was like a dividing line. Half of us was covered with snow. And it's just, again, I'm sure they've drilled for stuff like that. They know the tricks of how to, you know, flex your knees and how to move slightly so that you kind of adjust yourself without being too obvious about it. But it's still incredible to see.
I was never in a marching band as a musician, but I watch all of that with all of that precision, and I just marvel at it. Because it shows attention to detail and how detail matters in ritual. And right. Without getting too heavy, you know, I like to see that because it says you care. So that
exactly.
So that when we, you know, when we come to our masses, we need to be the same way. We need to care. And I think that's without going down a rabbit hole, I like to see this, you know, played out to the American people so that they can think about that. So if somebody does come in at a funeral and says, we care, we want to do these things, and sometimes they can be a little strange, I give them at least a lot of credit saying, you care enough to have planned this, you care enough to have put this together, and let's see how we can put this, you know, merge all of this to make it, you know, acceptable, you know, wonderful for everybody.
It might not be the way you want it. It might not be when you want it, but we are going to try to work with you. You know, I've had things where, we would like to show this video, you know, at the end of the funeral. It's like, okay, well, first of all, we don't have the technology to do that in the church itself. However, we can put the video on loop, you know, downstairs during the reception. We can do it, you know, after the wake, we can show it. You know, there's times we can do this. It's just the way you want it, we can't do it. But we understand that this is meaningful to you and we want to work with you on that.
That's one thing I must admit. None of these state funerals or even funerals of popular figures, none of them have video.
No.
Nobody has ever tried that yet. And I think that's interesting to note because they're not seeing that as, or even audio. Everything is always a live performance.
Exactly.
Not, let me bring this tape in and have it play.
Exactly. Now, Steve, you said you did marching band. I mean, I suppose when you did that, you had to do some practice on how to have a little bit precision doing that.
Oh, yeah. Right? I mean, yeah. So I was in marching band in both high school and college. And these days, high school is almost a little bit more precise than college. A lot of high schools go to competition with their bands. And so, so they spend a whole lot more time on all the little details because that's you get graded on those things. Mm-hmm. And so in most cases, or a lot of cases around here anyway, the high school bands are the ones that are the more precise. The college bands, they're for more entertainment. Mm-hmm. And so they change their shows every week and that kind of thing. And so you kind of lose some of the precision that way. But it's the high school where... And I think it's a good place for it, too, because it's good for the kids to learn that kind of discipline and that kind of attention to detail and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think, you know, some of those college displays you see, some of the bigger schools that are known for their marching bands, there has to be a precision there to do some of the forms and, you know, you're playing and you're moving and you're crossing each other and, you know, all this stuff's going on. You do have to have a bit of precision with that. Otherwise, you know, otherwise you're going to get people running into each other.
Yeah. The charting software they have these days is, really helps out a lot. When I was in college, just as that stuff was starting to be created, and you still have worked it out on paper. And there were times where you would collide with people because you said, you've told me to do something impossible. I need to go from here to here while this other group is going from here to here, and we're both going to meet in the middle, and it's not going to work. But these days, the computer programs help avoid that kind of thing.
That sounds like bad stage directions to me. When I was in theater, you had the director telling you to move here, and then he tells the same thing to the next person. You both move to the same place together. That's not the thing.
Well, do that and then do it for 300 people simultaneously.
Yeah. Yeah, that's sorry, but two of us can't be in the same place at the same time. It just doesn't quite work.
The other good one is where they want you to move 50 yards in about 10 steps. And it's like, no.
Yeah, exactly. Let's try, you know, like add another zero on the end of that, then maybe we can talk.
That's right. Says, I know what you're trying to do. It's going to look great, but it's physically impossible.
Yeah,
especially when I'm carrying a sousaphone or something.
Exactly.
All I can hear right now is and I can't think of the name of the movie. Where this is my dance space. You do not come into my dance space. This is my dance space. Healthy. It's the same one that puts baby in the corner.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not Dirty Dancing, is it? No, it's... is that? Okay.
Oh, it was. Okay. That's funny. One of those movies I haven't seen in a long time, so I didn't remember it, but yeah. Well, it's good. Very, very good. Good thoughts on that. I think the good place to kind of take a break here. And once again, thank everyone for listening to Let's Talk and the other SQPN podcasts. We enjoy putting these podcasts together, and we're glad that you enjoy listening to them. And we hope that you get enjoyment out of them. You learn from them. You're willing to share what we're offering through these podcasts. So we encourage you to like and subscribe to our podcast, to send them to others, to say, to check them out, check out what we're doing with Secrets of Doctor Who, Secrets of Star Trek, Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, of course, this one, Let's Talk, and others. We also want to encourage you to help support us. We are reaching the end of our giving campaign, and admittedly, we're not where we want to be at this time. So we want to encourage you to go to sqpn.com/give and encourage others to do so as well to support the work that we do. Like I said, we enjoy doing these podcasts, but they do cost money. not so much for us actually hosting the podcast, but for the software we need to put the podcast together, for the hosting of the website that costs money, to making sure the podcasts are available. There are lots of little expenses. Of course, Dom is a full-time employee now. Dom Bettinelli is a full-time employee of SQPN, and he needs to get his paycheck. So I encourage you to support us there as well, support us in keeping him employed so that we can keep these podcasts coming. Obviously, if we can't afford to keep the podcast going, they will start, we will have to start to phase them out, if you will, and stop doing as many podcasts as we are, because we've got more podcasts we want to do. We've got more coming online in the next couple of months, and but we can only do that if you do support us. So please, once again, go to sqpn.com/give, and especially join our Patreon campaign to give monthly to help us throughout the year. And many thanks to those who have given. I know there are a number of people who have given, who have either moved over to Patreon, or past givers moved over to Patreon, or even new givers. We really appreciate those who are supporting our podcasts, and we hope that you will continue to do so in the future. So that's sqpn.com/give. Okay, now kind of the, I guess I should ask, first of all, is there anything more you got, either of you want to say about the funerals and the funeral rites that you've seen?
Well, I took a look at the Houston one, Steve, and again, it's a, it looks like a very straightforward Episcopalian funeral. I like the fact that they, of course, would use the Eternal Father Strong to Save, which is the Navy hymn, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I can't help turn up a smile towards Honorable Christian Soldiers.
Yeah.
It just makes total sense. That's all. And For All the Saints really got a lot of use on the 2 days. Mm-hmm. So I'm a Ray Vaughan Williams fan. I like to hear all 9 verses of that, only on certain occasions.
I have to say, though, that Onward Christian Soldiers is a bit of an earworm for me, and it's been in my head now for a good 24 hours. I was humming it this morning when I was getting my breakfast, and I was like, oh my gosh, I can't, where did that come from?
Yeah, that's one you definitely don't hear a lot, at least in the Catholic Church right now, because people don't, they think it's too militant, I think. But maybe we should have a little bit of that militant set. Again, you'll talk about the military, the decorum, the precision, the pride that the military has, in doing its job and doing its job well. Right. And maybe we need that as Christians a little bit.
And the other comment I had was, I would have liked to have heard Drew McIntyre do the Lord's Prayer. Was that the Malat? Protestant version of the Lord's Prayer, that as for thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, is the beginning.
Yep.
I'm trying to remember. It was a familiar version of it. I think it must have been that one.
I like her voice. I'm just trying to picture it on, hear it on the Lord's Prayer.
Yeah, I bet it was quite nice, actually, because she's got an incredible voice.
It was nice, and I had a little chuckle, though, because they let an Oklahoman into their Texas service, which I... I mean, I live in Oklahoma. I'm from Oklahoma. It's like, I can't believe they live in Oklahoma. No, all of them did a very wonderful job. It was very nice. And you could tell that it was something that the family could relax to. They looked a lot less stressed out during that one than they did the one in Washington.
Sure.
And I just got to say, they must be exhausted. I mean, the family's been on point for a week now. And I certainly hope they're getting some rest.
I'm sure they went back to their homes and the Bush Ranch there and everything and just collapsed.
Well, you know how it is when you have a funeral of somebody in your family, and just that one day takes everything out of you, and they had to do it for 4 days or 5 days.
Exactly. So, well, very good. Very good. Kind of now to switch notes here a little bit. as I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, the reason why we're recording today on this Friday before, or this Friday, is because tomorrow is the Feast of the Immaculate Conception. Of course, by the time you hear this, the feast will already have been celebrated and will be well into the second week of Advent. But I thought it was a good opportunity to kind of remind, you know, why do we have this feast in the United States? I don't know about other countries, but I know in the United States, it's a holy day of obligation that is never abrogated, that the holy day, the obligation is never lifted. Unlike there's other ones that if they fall on a Saturday or a Monday, that the bishops say, well, don't worry about the obligation. This one that they never do. And that's because it's the patronal feast of the United States. Shortly after the dogma of Immaculate Conception was promulgated by Pius IX, the U.S. bishops got together and dedicated the United States under her protection, under her patronage. So this is we get together for this feast to pray for our country, pray for the United States, that she'll continue to protect and guide our nation. But that's not the only patron saint that we're familiar with. Joanne, are there any patron saints that you personally have an attachment to?
And the term I think nowadays online is the saint posse. You know, I would think, because I was educated by Jesuits, it's Ignatius of Loyola, most definitely. Mm. Yet I also do have some admiration, believe it or not, for Mary Magdalene.
Okay.
So there's an odd combo. But I think it's that, you know, those who do not look as if they are, you know, the holiest of holies, and yet God can take their lives and transform them.
Sure.
And do good works through their good stuff and through their foibles as well.
Sure.
So I think that's why those two sort of attract me.
Oh, that's those are good ones. I like those.
It's an odd pair, but it works.
Yeah. I think I might know one of Steve's, but how about you, Steve?
Yeah, I'm sure you do. I have three, actually, that I turn to most often. And the first one is St. Joseph.
Okay.
I did good 10 one. Years of campus ministry, and I always looked to St. Joseph as kind of a surrogate father to Jesus. And I saw my role as a campus minister in some aspects as a surrogate father for the college students. A surrogate parent or an uncle, actually. I sort of referred to myself more as an uncle, but as a surrogate for a family member. And then, you know, I spent a year in Papua New Guinea as a missionary and living with the Capuchin Franciscans. And so I learned a lot about St. Francis through that experience. And so St. Francis is also one. And then, of course, Father, you were referring to Blessed Stanley Rother.
Exactly.
Yes, I talk about him a lot. So those are my three go-to saints.
Very good.
There's also Saint Cecilia because of music.
Yes. You can have her too. Yeah, it is interesting how our patron saints a lot of times come from our life experience, like you mentioned, Steve, doing ministry, college ministry, and going to Papua New Guinea, and of course, you know, your experience with Blessed Stanley there in that area. You know, for me, it's one of my patron saints is Saint Benedict, because I studied, my college seminary was a Benedictine run seminary. It was run for the Archdiocese of Portland, Oregon. And I developed a great affection for Saint Benedict, for his, you know, rule of life. You know, obviously his rule is for monks, but there's so much that your average person can take out of that rule in living your life, especially, you know, ora labora, work and prayer. You know, that's how our life should be. And so I've got an attachment to him to the point where I still wear a Benedictine crucifix, a crucifix with the Benedictine medal in the middle, even underneath my black shirt. I don't wear it over my black clerical attire. I wear it underneath because it's, but like when I'm right now, I'm wearing a t-shirt, just a regular t-shirt. And that's when I wear it outside to expose it. So he's one of them. obviously as a parish priest, John Vianney, St. John Vianney is a major, patron of mine, one that I pray to on a regular basis for help as I'm running a parish. Cause he did wonderful, amazing things, but he was ultimately a simple parish priest. He was in not a very large parish. He wasn't in Notre Dame in Paris or anything like that. He was in what I understand to be a very humble parish, but yet he did great things as pastor of that parish. And so he's one that I look to as an example to follow. He's also one that I ask for his intercession as often as I can. Another one that I've really become acquainted with more recently, I've known about her for a long time, but more recently is St. Kateri Tekathwitha, because I do, have done work and do a little bit of work now on the Indian reservation 20 miles from here. And so, of course, she's a great patron out there. So I try to ask her help when trying to do work on the reservation. But it's good that we have these saints that we can ask for their help, and that's ultimately what this patron saint thing is all about, is we're asking these people to pray for us. These people who have gone before us, they're in heaven, they're before the throne of God, and we're asking them to pray for us that we might join them one day. That's ultimately is what it's all about. We want to get there.
Right. They are a small representation of all of us. All of us can find our stories in any of theirs and relate to it and see that we can, be better than we are, that we can overcome things, that we can preach, that we can teach, that we can even if it's just to the people around us. And then no one's going to know our names when we go, but we still make up that huge communion of saints.
Exactly.
That's one thing I appreciated, since Pope John Paul II to canonize a lot more modern saints as relevant examples for modern people who maybe don't relate well to somebody from the 1500s, but they might from somebody from the 1900s. It's like what's his name? Frassati?
Yes.
Can't think of the first name.
Giorgio
Frassati, yeah. Great example for young people.
Well, it's interesting too when you can say that you've seen a saint when he was still alive, like John Paul II. Mm-hmm. That makes such a stronger connection than, like you said, some little known Italian saint from middle of nowhere Italy that only people who really know him are people from that area. But he's a saint, and we can pray to him and we can ask for his intercession, him or her. But we can ask for their intercession, but we don't know them personally. We don't have that personal connection with them as we might. Well, as you do with Blessed Stanley, that's someone that's from your area. Someone you know the environment he grew up in. You know the environment he lived in.
I went to Mass in his hometown and found out I was sitting next to his brother after Mass.
Oh, that's wild.
who grew up with him and the whole thing. That kind of surprised me.
Awesome. That's pretty incredible. And there is one patron saint I have to mention, and it actually will tie into my pick of the week, which we're going to shift over to here in a minute, is St. Arnold of Metz. Arnold, depending on how you pronounce it, of Metz. He was a bishop in Germany who did a lot to kind of reform his diocese and everything. But there's a story that after he died, he was such a beloved bishop that when he retired, he went up to a monastery. Well, when he died, people from his diocese went to get his body so they could bury him back in his diocese. And as they were leaving town, it was a very hot, miserable, muggy, nasty day, and they didn't have enough beer. So they asked for his intercession that they be able to have enough beer, and not just that they have enough beer to make the trip, but they had enough that they could have a party after they got back to the town. So he's the patron saint of brewers in beer.
Very nice.
Nice. It's awesome.
So there's some good ones out there. That's just the thing too. These patron saints, they're not just people who, oh, we admire their life in prayer. We admire their life in service. You know, sometimes it's just there's fun stories behind them like that, where you just say, OK, this is someone I can relate to because he made sure that his people carrying his body back had enough beer to drink. We can handle that.
There you go.
any more either you want to say on?
Oh, goodness.
No, I think I'm tapped out.
There we go. Well, it's good. Yeah. good time to switch over to our picks of the week anyways. And since I kind of hinted at it, I'm gonna go first this time. Usually I let the guests, the panelists go first, but I'm going to go first. My pick, I'll put it this way. I like beer. You know, the song, I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. You know, I like, you know, but I don't just like any beer. I like, you know, real craft beer where it's, you can tell that there's much more care put into it. It's not mass produced. It's, you know, microbrewery. We've got a little microbrewery here in town now, which is awesome. And I love it. So my pick is actually a magazine called Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. It's a magazine. It's out of Denver, Denver, Colorado area. And, you know, it's a beautiful magazine, you know, nice glossy cover and beautiful pictures and everything. And it's about both appreciating craft beer and the brewing side of it as well. Home brewing, microbreweries, you know, the actual brewing of it. You know, I've done some home brewing and I enjoy it. I haven't done much recently, but they've got recipes in there on different types of beer. And they'll talk to these breweries and these breweries will say, okay, well, here's a scaled down version of our recipe for our IPA or our stout or our porter, you know, and so that someone at home can make that beer if they have the knowledge, obviously, to brew. So it's very enjoyable. And again, it's a beautiful magazine, too. It's one of those you can leave on your, you know, coffee table when visitors come over to flip through, because it's got beautiful pictures and great articles and everything. And so my pick is a Craft Beer and Brewing Magazine. If you're interested in craft beer, it's very much worth checking out. Joanne, what's your pick this week?
Well, last time I had the same pick as someone else. Hopefully I won't this time again. but this is on Amazon Prime, and it's the second season of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I saw the first season quite by accident, quite enjoyed it. It is adult fare, so kiddies, this is not for you. But it's a really good story about a woman in the 50s who has to kind of step out of her comfort zone after her husband decides to leave her and get a divorce. So she becomes a comic, or she tries to become a comic. So it's very, very interesting. I find it, this and one that I've been watching for years called Midwife, because they happened in the 50s and because it was around the time when I was born, I like to see what life was like. And try to understand, you know, what my parents, you know, were kind of going through. But, and believe me, they didn't go through anything like Call Me Wife and The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. But I just find those 50s era stories now to be very appealing. So if you're looking for something that's very humorous and also a little bit, she can be a little on the wild side with some of her jokes, but she's very, very good. And Rachel Brosnahan, who plays Midge Maisel, is just a delight. She's a breath of fresh air as an actress is concerned. So it's on Amazon Prime. It's a Prime original. It's The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. By the way, I did finally get to see Bohemian Rhapsody last weekend. It came to our theater. Awesome. Of course, you know, the tough part is I'm sitting here, I'm like dancing in my seat because I love Queen's music, so.
It's better the second time.
I bet it is.
Because
I'll have to see it. I didn't have the chance to see it twice, but I'll, when it comes out on streaming, I will be watching it again.
Yeah, they did some marvelous camera work in that movie.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. And I love Mike Myers' role. That's all I can say.
I totally missed that was him the first time I saw it.
I knew it was him only because I had a hint from our two panelists, both Angela and Joanne, hinted at it. And I love his line.
But did you see Adam Lambert?
No, I didn't.
That was
a surprise. Yeah, so, how about you, Steve? What do you have for a pick for us this week?
Mine is an idea that I'm pursuing. A little bit different.
Interesting.
So, you know, we're coming up to the end of the year, and I hate making resolutions, and I'm terrible at goal setting. But I've noticed in the last year or so that I've done a really poor job of just balancing life issues, you know, life and work and spirituality and all that. So I'm taking a little bit more of a systematic approach to goal setting this year. And I'm researching some ideas on how to do that. And I don't want to go overboard, but I also want to have a little bit more systematic way of doing it. So right now I'm looking at some of the stuff that Michael Hyatt has and some others. I haven't settled on one yet, but so it's the idea that I need to be a little bit more organized in setting some realistic goals for next year. Because I have I have a really big year coming up with work commitments and things like that. And I just don't want to be totally overwhelmed by it.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah, for a lot of us, that's something we need a lot more of is goal setting and organization. I always joke, you know, there's the book Getting Things Done, but what if you're not taking the time to actually get reading the book done to get things done?
That's my problem too. I've got a stack of probably 25 books that I want to read and I never get to them.
Exactly. So, well, very good. Very good. Very good conversation. You know, it was interesting to hear about President Bush's funeral. I wish I had seen it now. I suppose I could go back and watch it on YouTube or something like that. One of the news channels will have it on demand or something like that.
I think C-SPAN has it too.
Oh, I'm sure. So, well, very good. Well, Joanne, where can people find you?
Deep in my office at cranberrycatholic.org, out in Collaborative. That's about where I am these days. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun, and I enjoy serving the people in Lakeville, Rochester, and Middleborough, Massachusetts.
Excellent. And how about you, Steve?
Everything esteban.com. That's esteban.com.
Excellent. And again, I'm Father Corey Stika. You can find me at my website, frcorey.org. You can find me on Facebook and Twitter, Father Corey Stika on Facebook and at Fr Corey Stika on Twitter. Once again, please do donate to our giving campaign, sqpn.com/give. If you want to leave us some feedback here at Let's Talk, we really appreciate that. If you do, it's letstalk@sqpn.com. Thank you once again for listening, and God bless.
This is Don Bettinelli again. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast and that you'll help us keep producing the podcast you love. Thank you for your generosity. To make your pledge and find out about the free thank you gifts we'd like to send you, visit sqpn.com/give. That's sqpn.com/give.